It's Tuesday, 17th of March, and you're listening to the Game Grain Greencast, your guide to the world of gaming news from the past week. I'm your host, Ace, and joining me are Cal.
Good evening.
Kayla.
Hello.
Nikki.
Hey.
And Catty.
Hello.
We've got a few news items, including a couple of announcements. Well, no. Including one announcement, technically. But we'll get to that. What's everyone been up to this week, Cal?
To be brutally honest, not a lot, really. No, I've been playing... oh, God, what have I been playing? I've been playing The Division. A fair amount of Division. Enjoying the new patch. Although it's a shame that there's no global event, but that's not until the end of the month. I'm not long finished for the game, Green Website. I'm not long finished my Abandoned Ship review, which I rather much enjoyed, which is one of those games which is, because it's early access, sort of coming back and forth to until eventually its official release, and that hopefully should be up on the site soon. But besides that, yeah, I've been rather busy, so not a massive amount of gaming time, which is a real shame. But that's me.
Okay, Kayla.
Me and Nikki were playing the free weekend for Ghost Recon Wildlands. I decided not to get it because I'm actually just not that interested. But Nikki has bought it and seems to be really enjoying it. I don't know, it just doesn't really resonate with me. Just sort of playing it, I was like, oh, it's just a shooter. It works, it's good, it's just nothing, I don't know, there's just nothing that really sort of stands out for me in that game. So that's that. What else have I been doing? So I've been heading up three new series for the website. One of them we spoke about last week, which was Development Spotlight. I think we spoke about upcoming this week as well. So that is every Monday, just do a post just to let people know what events cases are happening that week. So this week we spotlighted God of War. Other than that, I've been doing a huge amount, really.
Okay, Nikki.
As mentioned, I've been playing a lot of Wildland because I'm an absolute slave when it comes to Tom Clancy games, and I've been trying to do the Splinter Cell mission, and it's a pain in the ass, but I still really want to do it. besides that, I've actually been playing a couple of little bits and bobs here and there, a couple of Switch titles, a bit of Gilgun 2. I'm not going to talk about that one. just bits and bobs, really. And I even jumped back into Destiny 2 for about an hour. That's about
also,
it.
How's Destiny these days?
It's fast. Literally, they did an update called Go Fast. And again, I love Destiny. It's got problems, but I do love it. And I haven't played it for about maybe 2 months. And I just launched in and was just like, oh, how do I play? Because everything just felt so unnatural. Kind of got into it now. Got reaccustomed to the controls and the movement. And yeah, I like the update. But I'm excited for the new DLC coming on, I think, May 8th, Warmind. So that'll give me another couple of weeks of enjoyment. And then I'll wait until September when they do whatever the next big expansion will be.
So
is it on PC or console, sorry?
I play on PC.
I'm just sort of curious because I've been reading the community being really a bit shitty. Sorry, Kayla.
No,
curious. It's on my list to go back to, but I'm just like, because I've been reading so much about the community bitching and like saying that Bungie aren't doing really much to take in feedback, it's kind of putting me off, but I got it for free, so I'm kind of like, I want to go back to it.
The community of an online first-person shooter yeah. is shitty? How is that possible?
I know. Maybe. I like the multiplayer.
Okay, rather than go straight to Catty, because I believe he's got a lot to talk about, what he's been doing this past week, myself...
I thought you were going to say, because fuck you, or something like that.
Myself, I've been playing Far Cry 5, because I haven't finished it yet. I'm nearly there. I'm like 90% finished with it. And Pizza Titan Ultra I've gotten for review, which is a game where you play as the Ultra Mech, which is a 10-story tall robot with a pizza shop built into its chest. You run around various boroughs, cities, what have you, delivering pizza by slamming your fist through the building.
I was watching Luke stream that the other day, and I got the impression from a sort of watch for a little while, I got the impression that it was basically that pizza delivery mini game from Spider-Man 2, but with Transformers.
It's very over the top. Each delivery is for a specific... Well, each story delivery is for a VIP, such as a Planet Man, which is Captain Planet, but recolored. And there's one that looks like he belongs in Dragon Ball Z. One of the later ones is Captain Picard from Star Trek, but obviously renamed and looking slightly different to a copyright.
Is it just a game full of references?
It's full of references, yeah, to
do they a variety tip well? Of things.
No. But as Luke said during his stream, the price of pizza in the future has skyrocketed. It's like $15 for a slice.
That's about what you pay at conventions.
I was going to say, that just sounds like London.
Right, and Catty, what have you been up to?
Well, speaking of conventions, I went to EGX Res at the weekend and had a jolly old time. And I played a lot of games, and I have a list of games that is 21 games long that I want to write about. And my aim is to do one a night, and so far that's going well. We're one night in.
Sorry, very quickly. Did you just say I aims to do one a night?
I aims. It's been a long weekend.
As you were.
I won't go through the full list, but some standouts. Far Lone Sails, the first game I actually wrote about yesterday, is coming out very soon, and it's fantastic. It's sort of like a... It looks like Journey, a Journey-style game, but I think it will be very different to when you see the whole thing. But it's that kind of environmental storytelling. But you drive a giant steam-powered boat tank thing. It's a game. It was fun to play.
I'm just looking at it on Steam, and the art direction is absolutely beautiful. It's really nice.
Yeah, the game looks spectacular. It's sort of a post-apocalyptic thing. Basically, the seas have dried out. And that's all I know, really. Other mentions, I don't think it's on the list. I've got Order of Magnitude, it is on there. It's from the guys who made, Prison Architect. It's their new game, they've literally only been working on it since their last game launch, which was midway through last year, I think. It was the first time they've shown it. It's... again, another end-of-the-world situation. You have to build the first colony on the moon. A lot of people... I've not played Surviving Mars yet, but a lot of people are saying it's Surviving Mars, but you can actually do what you want rather than... It's got a lot more freedom and you can, yeah, do a lot more stuff. That game had a fun bug where all the numbers were slightly wrong and they hadn't noticed until I pointed it out first thing on Friday morning. Other than that, there's a game called The Hatching where you play as a giant crocodile. I don't think I need to say anything else. You just play as a giant crocodile and eat people. There's so many games. There's too many games. We'll sort out a thing and hopefully have a nice big EGX Res list of the games I want to write about. But because I went to London, I had plenty of time to sit on a train, so I took my Switch and have been playing basically nothing but Stardew Valley in my own free time. And I've kind of fallen into a Stardew Valley hole now, where I just want to play it.
I haven't gone back into that.
Still never played it.
I'd almost certainly be playing it now if my Switch hadn't died. It's just charging over on the other side of the room, waiting for this podcast to be done so I can play more Stardew Valley.
Good news, listener, this is an extra long podcast.
No!
Don't worry, we're here to help you. We'll weed the addiction out of you.
One more I want to talk about.
Weed? I thought we were going to whip it out.
Well, it's Stardew Valley, so it's like farming, so it's weeds and shit.
One more game I do want to talk about that I forgot. I played the new Shaq Fu game, and that is surprisingly actually very good.
Ooh.
It's a brawler? Like a Streets of Rage style brawler. But my big concern, it kind of plays the Deadpool card where it's very self-referential. It is very aware that it is a stupid game. And it breaks the fourth wall constantly in the demo that I played. I kind of hope that they tone that down a little bit because it was very... There's a line where you're being led through and the guy who's telling you how to play the game disappears when all the fighting happens. And Shaq says, "Why do you keep running away?" And the guy replies, "We didn't make enough money on the Kickstarter to make my fighting animations." And it's funny, but it kind of took me out of the game a little bit.
That kind of stuff can wear a bit thin, kind of.
If that was the only joke like that in 5 minutes, that'd probably be fine, but it was literally just constant fourth wall breaks. I kind of hope that it's a little bit more toned down later on in the game, because I have a feeling that was the full, complete game. Certainly wasn't an end point that I reached.
It sounds like it's your fault for not pledging to this Kickstarter, so...
Yeah, it's entirely my fault.
Yeah.
I've let everyone down.
But all they need to do for Shaq Fu is make a semi-decent game. All they need to do, as long as it's not worse than the original, they'll be absolutely fine.
Oh, the gameplay is great. It feels really good. You are significantly more powerful, but there is challenge in it. You have access to a lot of very cool animations. My honestly only concern is that the writing might just be a little bit too trying to be Deadpool.
Okay. Well, from games that aren't out to a game that has content planned for the future. Sea of Thieves. As we mentioned last week, they've released a video about their roadmap for the near future. I believe Kayla knows more about this than I do.
Well, I wrote the post, so I should. So the developers released a video talking about three major content updates, and they are called The Hungering Deep, Cursed Sails, and Forsaken Shores. The video was relatively long, and they didn't really reveal anything. They're keeping their cards very close to their chest, which actually I really like, because Sea of Thieves is very much a game of where you go in and you discover, so I'm glad they haven't told us like exactly what's happening for updates. So the first one that we'll be rolling out is The Hungering Deep, which will introduce a new eye of threats into the world. So whether this is going to be a new like sea monster, or maybe like an expansion on the Kraken, maybe? We don't know. But between all of these updates, they're going to be running weekly events to keep people interested. I can't remember exactly what they said about the weekly events. Nikki, can you remember?
So the weekly events, what they're going to think of doing, sorry, I had a cough there, is essentially playing with the mechanics, but not to the point where, because obviously what makes Sea of Thieves great is a flintlock pistol is a flintlock pistol, a cannibal is a cannibal. But they're going to mix it up with things such as maybe one week there'll be an event themed around ghosts, and you might have essentially a cursed cannibal. They didn't go into details, but these events will give you sort of rewarding challenges to do, both from a reward in-game and a sense of accomplishment as well. So like one might be, there's thrones all across the map, really high places. You've got to figure out how to get up to that throne, and you've got to sit on the throne, and then you get a cool selfie moment, you get some loot, and, you know, something different. It's more about verticality and such. But the weekly events will just mix and match things up, and I'm okay with that, to be honest with you.
I uninstalled Sea of Thieves. I played about a few hours of... because I think the last time we talked about it, I was raving about it, because I just wanted to keep playing it. I just hit a wall where I was like, oh, yeah, this is not working anymore for me. I'm interested by the stuff that they're talking about. This roadmap has given me faith that they might make a good game by the end of the year. But for now, I'm happy with not playing it.
Yeah, I can see myself sort of off and on playing it and coming back every time there's... something new to try, I suppose. I think it will get to the point where there will be plenty to just get back into it and play constantly. But for now, yeah, it's very much a start and stop kind of game. But yeah, I am very interested in what these updates are going to bring. So the next two, it's going to be Cursed Sails and Forsaken Shores, which will come... in the summer, I think they said. Again, they haven't told us much about what's going on. Forsaken Shores is going to be a new area of the map to explore, which will be really fun. And as for Cursed Sails, again, it's all sort of speculation. Personally, I'm really hoping for enemy AI ships, maybe like ghost ships or something. Like, I think that could be really cool to have as another kind of random event within the world, like maybe so how the Kraken appears, the water all goes murky and inky and the Kraken appears. I'd like to see for Cursed Sails like fog roll in and you see like a ghost ship like in the distance or something, and you can go deal with that whenever. I think that'd be really fun.
I think the thing they really need to add, one of the most important things, is two new ships. Maybe actually just one new ship, because I think that the sloop one person can pilot just, well, steer just about. Three
new,
people
new
cannot do the galleon. Like, three people cannot do the galleon.
No, I agree with that. But yeah, but there is going to be another ship. I forget which update it's in. But
the second one.
So, Cursed Sails, so there will be another ship. And again, they haven't said what it's going to be. I'm hoping for a mid-range ship, so... I'm hoping for something that can be sailed with three people and kind of bridge that gap between the sloop and the galleon.
Yeah, I think two and three people. So then you have the sloop for one and two, this new one for two and three, and it just gives more choice for your players.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the one thing that kind of put me and Nikki off actually is... We love going around in the sloop, doing the two-player stuff, and we were quite good at dealing with other ships and galleons, but as soon as we came across a four-player galleon that were coordinated, there's just no chance, because it's four versus two, and you can't deal with it, it's way too much, and it's just frustrating to sort of kind of be, I suppose, outgunned and not really have a chance at all to be able to sort of steal treasure or be like forced out of a skeleton fort or something. It's, yeah, I don't know. I feel that there needs to be some kind of balance in there.
Well, to be fair, like when we... That was my phone. Even when we played, it was a bit of a tricky with us three, with the opposing pirates that attacked us as we were trying to do that island. There was always one or two that managed to get on board our ship.
Sorry, I had a mouthful of food. Yeah, I think that's the irritating thing. Because the main tactic at the moment is people will just climb aboard an enemy ship and get behind them and shoot them with a blunderbuss, and that's a one-shot kill. Done. And they have reduced the damage of the blunderbuss, but I think it is the case if you're point blank, you still will die, and then you have the issue of getting spawn camped on your ship where you respawn, can't move, you can hear everything going around you, and they just come up and shoot you again, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Right, from Sea of Thieves to something we can't stop talking about on this podcast, Fortnite. The mobile version was released fairly recently, and apparently it's had 11 million installs since launch, and that's iPhone only because the Android version hasn't been released yet. And it's made over $15 million.
Blows my mind. It really does. I didn't think there'd be an audience, but there clearly is. It's like, clearly people... Yep.
Just casual mobile players, isn't it? It's quite surprising that it's own... That's iOS numbers as well. So if it was Android as well, that would be a hell of a lot more.
It's not just casual players, it's kids and it's a lot of people. They've somehow made Fortnite work really well on mobile. I've not heard people say that it's actually bad.
It's from what I've seen, in the same way as the PUBG on the mobile, it's just a direct port, isn't it, of the PC version because of the Unreal Engine. So you'll find people like playing it on PC, getting killed, and then going off for a dump or something, and then playing it on their phone, or playing it at work.
Well, as Katty says, there's going to be kids playing it on their lunch break at school, in college, and all that.
But I'm not sure if Fortnite did the same as PlayerUnknown's. But in PlayerUnknown's, the mobile version, when you first start playing, apparently you're up against a lot of bots, and we saw a big increase in people being like, oh, I got first on my first game with the mobile version, and people are not actually present that they're against, just mostly bots, and the game slowly introduced you into more and more players, which honestly I think is genius on their part to hook people into playing, thinking, oh, I'm not good on the PC version. Yeah. Oh, but I'm amazing on the mobile, you know? So I'm curious to see if Fortnite has done the same.
I kind of imagine that would be true. I mean, it's just like, I've been playing on my mobile. I've been playing that Shadowgun Legends, and I've not really played FPSs on my mobile because I always find that like, the touchscreen interface is really crap. But because it has like the auto fire and it's quite generous with the auto aim, it's quite easy to get into, so I suppose that could be true.
So yeah,
I don't know. I'm not really a mobile phone player.
So could be an accessibility thing. Be that players that aren't so good on PC are doing better at home on the mobile.
I'd see there's a more and with mobiles as well. There's someone who's not really they may have an Xbox or they've got a PlayStation, but they might they're more drawn to perhaps playing it on their mobile casually than they are playing it on their console as a proper gamer, sitting there for hours playing Fortnite on the console. They'll jump in every now and again and they'll get that bit more satisfaction, as opposed to where Battlegrounds is and Fortnite is, you get killed and that's it, you're dead. But if the game is a little more streamlined and a little bit easier to get into, then you might find yourself playing it for longer on the mobile.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then spending money.
All the money.
And spending money.
I'll take it. None of us have played it on the mobile.
I've only tried PUBG on the mobile. Fortnite's only on iOS, so I don't have an iPhone. I tried PUBG. It's okay.
I did the same. And yeah, it's a thing.
I tried both of them.
Do tell.
So, PUBG on mobile plays like PUBG, and that's fine. You've got the issue with the bots. Mm. It's a good little introduction. There's actually some nice features like the auto-equipping of attachments and things.
Yeah, I noticed that. Well, I thought that should be something on PC.
Fortnite.
Well.
Yeah, as I was saying, Fortnite on mobile can fuck off. It's literally the worst thing to try and control.
I mean, I noticed on Android, when I was scrolling through some of the top-rated apps, one of them was an app to let you hook up a keyboard and mouse to your phone. And, like, even in the description and in the title, it said, "Play PUBG with keyboard and mouse." I was like, oh, dear. Really? Would you go out your way to play PUBG on the mobile with a keyboard and mouse when you could just play on PC?
It's a premium product on PC, but it's free on mobile.
So, I still think it's a bit sad to use a keyboard and mouse.
Yeah, you probably that app is probably, you have to probably pay for that one.
It was Chinese, though, to be fair. Like, a lot of the screenshots were in Chinese, so that could be a reason.
That's the only way to get PUBG in China, is it not? They haven't released it on PC there, have they? Or am I thinking of something else?
Yeah, it is on PC China. They invaded the UN American servers. Yeah. There was a big hoo-ha about it a couple of months back where, like, even Brendan Green, player unknown, sort of said, no, we're not going to restrict them because of xenophobia or anything like that. It's like, it's nothing to do with that. It's not like we hate the Chinese. It's the fact that their connections are awful and they are hacking. So that kind of put me off from playing PUBG for a fair while.
Yeah, but the thing you have to think about is they're hacking and getting kicked and banned, and then they're buying another copy.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
They're getting banned and then buying another copy.
Yeah, it's like the Russians with Counter-Strike, isn't it? Yeah, I suppose. It's like, oh, no, we're not going to restrict them because it makes us more money.
To take this back to the original story, where Fortnite is on mobile is just earning shit tons of money. I don't know if you remember, about 2 months ago, Epic announced that all of the Paragon assets were going to be made free, and people worked out it was probably cost about $12 million. So Fortnite in 1 month has made them back their losses from Paragon, effectively.
Well, no, that 12 million is essentially the development cost of those assets. So that's what, 3-4 years worth of time made it back in like a month.
Crikey.
In 20 days.
Yeah.
Roughly.
And yeah.
Riding off the success.
And also to the people that were like, oh, these assets can't be worth 14 million, 12 million or whatever. Like, no, it costs money to make games, artists and programmers, they deserve their wages.
Yeah, it's a development cost.
Yeah, they deserve their wages, man.
Yeah, but if I contact some artist on Twitter and bug them and say, can you do this for free, then they'll do it, right?
No,
that's
supposed
how
to do
Twitter
is walk
works.
Off a cliff.
For exposure.
Yeah. That's how you paid for your Chinese, isn't it?
I exposed themselves. Sure. Things I'm not proud of for this Chinese.
What? Ask me to order it.
Exactly.
Right, there's not a segue for this. Steam Spy has announced that they will no longer be able to operate because of changes to the privacy settings on Steam. Because Steam have changed their privacy settings. By default, everyone's games on Steam are hidden, which means that Steam Spy can no longer access the information it needs to run.
Could someone explain Steam Spy to me?
Yes. So Steam Spy...
It spies on you.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, it is... you can search user accounts and information, which is all—it's all publicly accessible data anyway. It's, you know, it's not hacking or anything. It's just it gets cached files, and basically, it can work things out like the value of your account, playtime, achievements, like it, sales fees as well for games, because it can sort of cross-reference across how many accounts on the Steam database have that. So, yeah.
If you've ever wondered where we get the, if when we're talking about a game having no players, we get that from Steam Spy.
So I use Steam Charts for that.
Well, this is the
thing. I wanted to see the player count.
All of these services will be going down. For those of you that aren't aware, this is all because of GDPR, which is a new European rule around data protection. Everyone is having to abide by it. It is. On the one hand, it's a pain because we lose these sort of things, but at the other time, on the other hand, sorry, it's kind of a good thing, GDPR. Also, an interesting thing about Steam Spy going down is, because I follow a lot of developers on Twitter, they were very mixed about it closing down, because on the one hand, they've lost an easy way to sort of see sales figures and compare them to similar titles. Obviously, Steam has built-in analytics for developers, I think so. But on the other hand, it's also a good thing because they can't do that. Because it's like, well, I can release a game and immediately see, oh, well, it didn't do as good as this other game that was exactly like mine. But now they can't do that. So it's kind of hit and miss. The developer community are sort of 50-50 on it, really.
Very well, from some sad news to some good news, depending on how you feel about Shenmue. Sega have announced that Shenmue 1 and 2 are going to be re-released / touched up for PlayStation 4, Windows, and Xbox One sometime this year.
Sega are doing a big push on Remember the Good Old Days. Because they're also doing
that
big
doing
remaster.
We've been doing 20 years.
They're really pushing it now. Like, I think it started with
Sonic Mania.
Sonic Mania. Because they've got that, the... what's it called? I've now completely forgotten what it's called. The here's a load of our old games in a interface
Sega
thing.
Sega Forever.
Sega Forever, thank you. They were showing that massively off. That was... at their booth at Res, that was the thing you saw. And they made sure that it was playing very loudly the original Sonic music. You could hear that across the convention centre almost. Just the Sonic Collecting Rings thing. They were really trying to make people come to their booth to play games that they have owned since the 90s. So this doesn't surprise me at all. Specifically with Shenmue 3. Coming out eventually.
There's also rumors of a Mega Drive Mini coming out, like an official one. Like,
yeah,
like basically
I saw
what
that
they did
as
with
well.
This, with the SNES.
I thought that was confirmed.
I don't know. I just spotted it earlier, but I know there's been loads of other companies that have produced their own versions, but I think this is just like an official Sega licensed one.
Yeah, to launch this year.
Yeah, that's officially announced.
It will have 15 classic Sega games.
15? Is that it?
Ironically, the first result that came up when I Googled was actually Crunchyroll. So, thank Crunchyroll for telling me that this was real.
It's strange. They haven't sent out press releases about it yet. We got sent one for Shenmue 1 and 2, but absolutely nothing else that they announced it this past weekend.
The Sega FES event.
That's the one. back to Shenmue 1 and 2, it's going to have it's going to stay true to the originals with modernized features, including higher screen resolution, a choice between modern or classic control schemes, an updated user interface, the option to enjoy either the original Japanese or English voiceovers, as well as graphical options on the PC.
See,
the trailer they released was, I'm pretty certain, was using Dreamcast footage or Xbox One footage, because it's in it's square, it's not widescreen.
See, all I care about with this is that beautiful voice acting for the guy that takes your picture. Because I really can't wait to hear that once again.
I just want to spend all my money on pachinko.
Pachinko machines.
See, I like the idea of this because I've never actually played this Senua series, so it's always been on my list to actually get round to playing.
I love about this kind of era of remasters and remakes, that it has given us a chance to pick up games that we missed a while ago. So I'm really excited about Spyro Reignited. Like, I've never played them before, and I'm really excited about being able to actually experience that now.
Love the Spyro game, so I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, I think that I played through all of Shenmue 1 and as much money as I could, because I knew that your save file could carry across to Shenmue 2. And I don't think I left the starting area, because I just spent all day, every in-game day at the pachinko machines. And that's where I learnt that the Japanese for excellent is haitara.
Games are educational.
So I was 3 years old when the first Shenmue came out. And I was 5 when the second one came out. So I've not played them suitable. Either.
They were not suitable for your age.
Yeah, no kidding.
No, I was 9 years old.
We all know I'm the oldest one here. Come on, let's move on.
How speaking old were you? Old,
speaking of old people, we have as Kayla mentioned earlier in the podcast, we have a new series called Upcoming This Week. And this week is a God of War.
Daddy Kratos. I shouldn't say that.
Bearded Kratos. Tilk cake Kratos.
So I've not been following along. The child, which of the 7 games was the child conceived in? Because there's,
none of
there's
them.
A sex minigame in all of them, isn't there?
I was going to say, like, because the main premise in the previous God of War games, did he murder his family or something like that? And, like, went on a rampage, and that's why his body sort of stained with the ashes of his family or some sort.
Yes.
So if this is like a reboot, then I guess that doesn't count?
Almost. He basically got used to do the bidding of the gods. The punishment he basically got, like, the chains attached to him, and then they killed his family, or he killed them, one or two, and then they were like, lol, you're gonna wear their ashes now, because why the fuck not? Which is actually kind of funny when people are like, oh, why is Kratos, like, white as a ghost? It's like, no, he's actually a big, you know, Spartan guy. He's just covered in ash. but I think...
Pantheons of gods are dicks.
This is true. But yeah, I think in this one, my understanding, at least what the gist I've gotten from the trailers is that, like, the game's like, oh, happy family. Oh no, the mum died. We will go and do Norse epic burial thing. And now we're on an adventure. I'm angry.
I mean, it wouldn't be a God of War game if Kratos wasn't angry.
Hmm.
God of Depression.
I like that they've really done a whole new beginnings with it. So much so that they've taken away a lot of like the iconic things for Kratos, like his chain blades, and replaced it with this, I think it's a really cool like rune-inscribed axe that players can customize to sort of fit their playstyle.
It's a boomerang axe, because you can bring it back towards you.
To just give him Thor's hammer, but they were like, oh, maybe we can't do that with all the Marvel films at the moment, so we'll make it into an axe, and it's the same thing, really, just instead of lightning, it's ice.
You know Thor has an axe, right?
Yes, I know, and it was enchanted so he could break through, what's his face? Can't remember his name. The dude's armor, the mutant guy. Apocalypse, that's the one. I know my Marvel stuff, don't you mess with me.
What's a DC?
Direct current is where you...
Dreamcast.
Distinguished Competition.
Shenmue was on it, don't you remember?
Look, the only game I properly played on the Dreamcast was this weird tennis game. Because when I was a kid, we used to go to like some weird like restaurant/children's playpen, let the children run around in like a bull pit for an hour. And they had like a Dreamcast in the corner, and I just stand there the whole time playing this tennis game. I have no idea.
Virtua Tennis was brilliant.
There you go. And yeah, it was great. I made a friend playing that. Never saw them after we left.
That was Nikki's only friend.
I used to go to Virgin Megastore during my college lunch break and play Virtua Tennis. But that's only when they didn't have Spider-Man on the PlayStation. They also had Saturn. I used to go over there and input the cheat codes.
Why are you? I had a friend, an American friend of mine. Mm-hmm. An American friend of mine who kept playing Phantasy Star Online on his Dreamcast. I was like, is it on PlayStation? He was like, no. I was like, oh. Okay.
Can we just appreciate, to take this back to where we started talking about with God of War, how the lowest currently is on the review aggregate sites is 8 out of 10. The lowest score.
Because it looks like it's going to be that damn good. But then again, yes. I've heard people criticize because of the early reviews. Saying, like, don't listen to them or something.
Well, yeah, if they come out too far in advance, it looks like sites have been writing them because they were invited to an event.
Mm.
And we all know how that
the
goes.
Last time that... Yeah. But Open Critic, it's sitting at 95, and Metacritic, also 95.
What?
Lots of 10s, 9.5s... Yeah.
It's not just the game itself, it's like people talking about the visuals and the graphics. It's just like a technical masterpiece on the PlayStation.
I was going to say as well that like what makes it so appealing is that it is a continuation, but it's also a fresh story, so people can just like jump in and enjoy it.
Again, God of War is one that I've always missed. And yeah, I feel like this is a good starting point, I guess.
I was just interested. I decided to go on a couple of the 8 out of 10s, or the 4 out of 5s, or the 80%, or whatever. Just to see if they maybe played it on the original PlayStation 4. But I think they're all on PS4 Pros. So it's not technical thing.
Well, they have also shown that actually not much of a difference between the PS4 Pro and the PS4 visuals. And in fact, people have actually said from the early reviews that it's actually better to play it not in 4K, because apparently even God of War does have a slight frame rate issue when running in 4K.
That's every game running on the PS4 Pro, though.
Yeah,
it's 5 out of 10.
It's not pushing for 60, is it? Like the previous games. I think it's like 30 now. Not a bad thing, but still.
The human eye can't distinguish between 30.
Oh, shh.
The human eye can't distinguish between 9.5 and 9 out of 10.
The other thing as well.
But yes.
Was, it's all well and good being like, hey, this game runs in 4K and, you know, all this great text resolution and such, but I only know one person. Like, 4K TVs have still not become as widely adopted as I think the games and media industry wish.
You cut off there. I think you lost connection for a second.
Oh, sorry. What did you? I was basically moaning about how 4K TVs aren't as popular as, you know, they should be. But I kind of just continued ranting. So I'm just a grumpy old person. I'm sorry.
No, I agree.
4K. No, I agree. I agree because, like, although 4K TVs are really cheap, there's still not that massive adoption. People are like, well, what to get out of it? And a lot of people, when it comes to televisions and Blu-ray movies, you've got 4K Blu-ray movies are quite expensive. They're about maybe like £5, nearly £10 more than a standard Blu-ray.
And so are the players for them. They are much more expensive.
Yeah. And the Blu-ray players are way expensive.
I think currently the cheapest UHD 4K Blu-ray player is the Xbox One.
Yep, it is.
No lie, I waited until 3D TVs had been out for 2 years before I got a HD TV. I do not adopt new television standards very quickly.
I'm actually the same.
Not a lot of people do.
I think the problem with 4K in general at the moment is most places don't have 4K options. Like Sky, and in talking of in England at least, I don't think any of the standard broadcasters have 4K on their channels. And I think the only thing in this country that you can actually get that does 4K is Netflix and YouTube, and both of those are a massive drain on your internet.
And you know what's really funny? Is there's all this talk about 4K gaming, yet a lot of the entertainment industries, especially sports, have basically gone, nah, screw 4K. We're now going to do 8K VR 360 video, so which are then viewed on 720p resolution devices. So, you know, it's like 4K TVs might as well just not exist right now.
The Amazon, I was also wrong, Amazon apparently have 4K options, though I've never seen one. It recommends 15 megabits per second at a minimum to do 4K, and Netflix says 25. So 4K is just not viable in England.
Yeah, in a world where we got people streaming so much content more than actually physically watching it, like Blu-ray and all that, yeah, it's just because of broadband connections, it's just not viable. It's like I say, Amazon does do 4K, like I've seen it spotted, but most time it just streams it in 1080p. Anything I watch in 4K has been at Netflix. That's about it.
Well, back to God of War. This new entry, according to Wikipedia, is the highest scoring entry in the series, including the collections, remasters, etc. Because it's at 95 out of 100, and the next one below it is the original God of War at 94 out of 100. So, my question to you guys is, are there any other franchises that have been getting better with age?
See, I gave this a long hold thought today, and I was thinking for a long time, and I could not think of any series. I've thought series that got better with age and then got worse. Not thinking of anyone, every Activision series. But then, so I started thinking of indies, and there aren't many indie franchises, but I did think of one, and I've checked it, and their games have gotten progressively higher Metacritic averages per every release. We're currently on the fourth release in this series. I'm talking of the SteamWorld series. Because you've got SteamWorld Tower Defense, from the which was on the DSi. And that got, I'm just going to double check, but I think it was like 71? Yeah, 71 on Metacritic. SteamWorld Dig, the original from 2014, got 82 on the 3DS and 79 on PC. Heist was slightly higher, I think. It was 86 on Metacritic. That one only came out on 3DS, I think. Oh, no, it seemed to come out on everything. I've only got averages, but 86. So it's slightly higher again. And SteamWorld Dig 2 is like 89, I think.
So good, those games.
88. So yeah, SteamWorld series has gotten better every single time. And I couldn't think of any other franchise that's ever done that.
The only game that came across my mind was perhaps Monster Hunter. Just how far it's come from being like a lowly, sort of almost unsuccessful PS2 game in the West, being quite massively popular for the PSP, and then is now Monster Hunter World is the biggest successful Capcom game in recent years. But that not necessarily because it's Monster Hunter.
I honestly expected someone to say, ooh, FIFA or Revolution Soccer.
Just because the graphics have gotten better doesn't mean the game is better.
I think Sonic has gotten better throughout the ages.
I can feel Ace brewing in anger.
Oh, another one.
I'm this close to muting you.
The Spider-Man games, they've been getting better.
I don't know, yeah. We'll get to see what the new one does, actually. Which is out end of the month?
Yeah.
End of September.
Yeah. That joke could become very dated very quickly.
Yeah, one series, actually, that Nikki just told me that I should say is StarCraft, actually. Recently playing
is that
through
a franchise?
The original...
Yeah, how many games?
Oh, no.
There's two games in that series.
It's not, is it? No, it's two games.
No, you got StarCraft. You got StarCraft. You got the expansion, Brood War, and StarCraft 2 released as three separate products. I count that as a franchise, motherfuckers. Also, I'm sorry for swearing.
Okay, so according to Wikipedia, StarCraft has 88 on Metacritic. StarCraft 2 Wings of Liberty, 93. StarCraft 2 Heart of the Swarm, 86. StarCraft 2 Legacy of the Void, 88. So, go on, Nikki, tell us how it counts as a franchise.
It might have counted as a franchise if any of the other spin-off games came out, but Blizzard keep canning them. I'm not salty about them canning Ghosts like three times.
Oh, yeah. See, I want to say Metal Gear, but I physically can't bring myself to accept that the final Konami release was better, you know?
No. I don't even see 4 being better than 3. So, yeah.
Okay, 4 is good. I really like 4, but 3 is probably the best. Like,
the 3 is the best.
Yeah.
What about the Elder Scrolls?
Because
a lot of people have a lot of love for Morrowind and Oblivion, but if you talk to anyone who's actually ever played those games, there are definitely things that were wrong with them.
Yeah, but I suppose with I prefer Oblivion. I've enjoyed Oblivion the most out of all the Elder Scrolls, but Skyrim's just shoved everywhere now. There's like so many people I know who are like, oh yeah, Skyrim. And because it's so in their face all the time with Bethesda saying like, Skyrim, it's people mentality on it is like, yeah, it's like the best Elder Scrolls.
Do we even do we even have time to talk about everything that's wrong with the Elder Scrolls games? Because I could go on for hours, and I love those games.
Now,
there's a lot wrong with them, yeah.
The question wasn't if the series was good, it was if the series had gotten better.
I actually would say no.
Then,
no. I'm going to say yes, just because the modders fix it.
No, okay. So the shipped product, no. But the results of the modders, yes.
If you're seeing it from the point of view of a console player where they've played, like, Morrowind up to Skyrim, then yes. But then when you've got talk to PC players that are like mods, they're like, yeah, probably Skyrim because of the amount of modding that's been produced for it.
There's still a sizable amount of mods coming out for Morrowind, the older ones are still getting worked on with new updates every couple of months. But yes, objectively, Skyrim looks better and is easier to play.
Because it got console-fied.
So it could be said to be better.
Do you remember when that was a thing, when like everyone would just talk about how like, oh, this game's been dumbed down for consoles? We don't have that anymore. Like, I mean, we do. Like, you know, you get PC ports that have the worst keyboard and mouse control layout ever. But like, you don't hear people moaning about it anymore, you know?
I was always fascinated with like developers using the limitation of the console to their advantage. Like, I remember when Doom 3 came out, and like the Xbox version of it was an entirely different game. Still sort of the same sort of framework, but because of the limitation, they had to sort of maybe shorten down levels, make some changes here and there. And it was a really impressive game for the time on the Xbox. I like that, but now with like consoles being so much more like PCs in terms of their hardware, it's just easier for them to, you know, stick to the same game across the board.
Yeah, there's so many games that suffered on PC because the consoles couldn't stream levels, so you had short levels with loads of loading screens that really didn't need to be there.
Well, when they were making Oblivion, they didn't even know what the Xbox 360's hardware was. So they were making a game and kind of just hoping that Microsoft actually at some point told them what the hell the specs were. And again, like, Horse Armor. Yes. And as you said, like, we're in a point now where we could make a game in Unity and just click a few buttons, and although yes, there's more to it than just that, but we could then have it running on pretty much most hardware. Not necessarily well, but it would be running.
Yeah, I think the porting technology has improved a huge amount, and with the advances in just console hardware as well, it's a lot easier to do now.
Yeah, engines have become more widely adopted across multiple platforms. Like the Unreal Engine pretty much works on Android, works on iOS, works on console, works on PC. It is rather well optimized across the board, unless it's in the hands of a shitty developer.
Who's that dig at?
Probably Bluehole for PUBG. Is how well optimized that is still. All of them apart from Epic.
To be fair, actually, though, I remember a few years back, you know, we had, jump back a few years, Square Enix decide we're going to stop using proprietary engines, we're going to use Unreal Engine 3, and they gave us the last remnant. Great game, shittest performance you've ever seen, and for a few years, we had people using Unreal Engine 3, and yet, like, they were just so bad technical-wise. So when Unreal 4 came out, I kind of turned a blind eye, but now it's like, oh my god, Epic, you've actually gotten your stuff together, and developers are actually able to make, you know, really quickly. And one of the things I love is that you can work in Unreal in VR, and there's even, I saw the other day, they've got a plugin now that you can be editing animations in your animation software, and see it live in the Unreal Engine 4, and it's like, awesome.
That's pretty cool.
Someone has made an add-on for the Vive, for Unreal Engine, where you can literally just do mocap.
Yeah.
Obviously, only with hands, but it's good mocap.
That's good. I like stuff like that. But I do agree with what you say about the Unreal Engine being so overused.
To take this back to...
Take it back now.
You talked about StarCraft, but obviously not being a franchise. But what is a franchise and has gotten better? Warcraft. Warcraft, the first one reviewed favorably, the second one reviewed very favorably, the third one reviewed slightly more favorably, and World of Warcraft is a franchise on its own, basically, so we'll ignore that.
I was going to say Halo, but that's only if you ignore 4 and 5.
And all the spin-offs.
Hey, Reach is alright. I haven't played it yet.
I was more thinking about the
RTS. The RTS, yeah.
The first one didn't do very well, and the second one... has anyone actually reviewed the second one? Did that happen?
It came out. People seem to like it.
Just no one's talking about it.
Talking about what?
Yeah, I remember.
And on that note, we've reached the end. Thank you for joining me, Nikki, Kayla, Katty, and Cal. You can find us and tweet to us on Twitter at Greencast, and find Game Green on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Remember to check out our Twitch stream from 8 PM GMT every single day. You can find this very podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or GameGrin.com. And while you're at it, game on.